You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the rogue deck builder. Each week, we design new decks in Modern and Pioneer. We put our creations to the test and share our findings on the air. Coming up on the brew session, six new decks with Righteous Valkyrie, a powerful life gain engine that pays you off with a massive double anthem. Then on the flashback, testing results with Birgi, God of Storytelling. That's all coming up on episode 11 of Kaldheim Season. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Faithless Brewing Podcast. I am David Robertson, joining you from a frigid Twin Cities. Unfortunately, Damon Alexander still out there crushing powder or whatever nonsense West Coast phrase he's like to use. So I am joined, luckily, by the CEO of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. He is Daniel Schriever. He's caved in online. Daniel, what's popping off?
Yeah, I'm doing well, David. I'm concerned. I haven't heard from Damon in a while. I thought they caught like a massive snowstorm up in the Pacific Northwest.
Fresh pow-pow or whatever the nonsense made-up word he uses.
Well, what if he's buried under an avalanche or something? Would we even know?
Yeah. I'll miss him. I'll say it. But even though we don't have Damon this week, we do have a special guest. So, Dan, would you like to give an introduction?
Absolutely. Today we are joined by Arun Singh of the Serum Visions podcast. You heard him in our Friday episode as we talked through all of the massive, massive shakeup to Modern and Pioneer. Arun goes by Jiggy Wiggy Online. He is one of the OG Niv-Mizzet brewers and also just a fantastic player, fantastic brewer. You can find him in 5-0s in the leagues, known to top 8 a challenge here and there. Arun, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I definitely appreciate the kind words. I am a little jealous. I would love to be shredding some fresh pow-pow. That sounds pretty sick. But I'm also very excited to be a guest on this podcast. So thank you again for having me for a second time.
Yeah, it's fortuitous. Not only did we get a chance to talk to you about the bans, we also will be reviewing some Birgi builds. And I noticed in our Discord, the Faithless Brewing Discord from the Patreon, you've posted and tried out a bunch of Birgi lists as well. So we kind of have an expert on if you're trying to cast Birgi and then take advantage of a bunch of red mana that she might generate after you cast a bunch of spells, you're the right guy to talk to. So can you kind of walk us through some of your kind of brewing concepts, how you think about the game? You kind of have a long list of decks and interactions that you were sort of a pioneer of in the modern format.
Yeah, so, I'm a little basic in that I just like powerful interactions and powerful cards, but also that are slightly, unintuitive, similar to how Dan saw Niv-Mizzet Reborn and was like, oh, I want to break that card. And turns out he did it. I still love to go to the original Reddit thread where Dan posts. He's like, this card looks sweet. I'm going to make it playable in Modern. And everyone is just shitting on him. They're like, you're crazy. Like, this will never be playable. Like, it's a 5-mana card in Modern, costs all the colors. Like, what are you drunk? Like, no way. Probably the biggest thing that I do is I work on Kinnan shells, which I really like. I like to go fast, move fast and break things maybe. And Kinnan plus Mox Amber. Kinnan turns Mox Amber into Mana Crypt, which is like kind of nuts. And also Springleaf Drum 2 works really well. I like to do some other things too, but I'm just kind of addicted to that synergy. Just when you're escaping Uros on turn 2 and turn 3 pretty consistently, it's kind of, makes the other things that you do feel slightly weaker in a sense. Also, the other thing I really like is been a huge fan of Lazav and Kroxa recently. Just these super dense threat packages. Alurus too, where like each card on its own can kind of take over. The one lesson I always learned brewing, which I'm sure Dan and David, you two have also learned brewing, is that you start a brew playing your pet cards and the card's like, oh, I'm going to have some fun ofs. And then you find out those cards are terrible and you cut them for like Teferi Time Raveler and just good cards. And the second you start cutting the bad cards for the good cards, the decks just get much more powerful. Rather unfortunate. I would love to play bad cards. But sadly, if when I want to win, I'm forced to put some good cards in my deck. I just like... I like these small packages, these thread packages, just kind of these turbo. I don't like to play interaction. You know, interaction means you have to do something. I prefer to make my opponents do something. And of course, they always do, and I always lose. You know, it's Kinnan, Springleaf Drum, Mox Amber. They fatal push your Kinnan. You've got a Mox that doesn't work, and Springleaf Drum is like actually useless. So, you know, we take those. But, you know, I enjoy putting permanents on the board, and I'm not the biggest fan of instants and sorceries unless I have to.
Well, I played a Kinnan Emery Springleaf Drum deck this week. I played it after Uro was banned in Modern.
Oof.
And I gotta say, I felt like the deck was missing something. Like, it was missing Uro. The deck is just a lot of air, and I kept looking at my graveyard and being like, well, this would be a perfect turn to escape a 6/6 and draw a card. But instead, I'm like, you know, casting a Chromatic Sphere and hoping to top deck a Song of Creation or something.
It was actually really amazing. I listened to the most recent episode where you're talking about Magda, and you're just talking about how your decks had so much air in them, and you just kept drawing these useless fluff and all these terrible creatures that just die to everything. And it's like, man, this is my experience with these decks too. So, you know, like, I'm not crazy. Like, I'm not like a bad player. I'm just playing these, you know, questionable decks that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be playing. But that was, you know, I always love to have my experience validated because it makes me feel like I'm not totally clueless.
And just to want to highlight another card you haven't even mentioned, too humble to mention maybe, Uryo, Soratami Ascendant. If anyone's ever been locked out or soft locked by that card, that is a card that you popularized as well. I started seeing those lists pop up after you 5-0'd and started posting some sweet-looking lists in the Discord.
Oh, yeah, that was... I mean, honestly, it's really funny because, like, that league was a pretty weak 5-0, to be perfectly honest. Like, I definitely got pretty lucky at times, and then, you know, Canister took the deck. Like, this was the blue-green Kinnan Uryo deck, and it was pretty cool and fun. You know, Canister took it in the league the next day. He did 4-1. He got so excited. He took it in prelim next day. He went 0-3. And, you know, like, every once in a while, I would try and replicate my success with that Uryo deck, and it kind of comes with the same issue that we were just talking about, where you have to run so much fluff, and, you know, like, you can have those sequences where, you know, you flip Uryo on turn 2 and you play a Karn on turn 3 and hot gravy, you know, you feel like you're on top of the world. But you also, you know, Uryo is pretty useless. Like, it's actually kind of a terrible card, and if it doesn't flip, it's extra terrible. And even when it does flip, I can tell you it does not feel great when they cast Primeval Titan with a Cavern of Souls through your Uryo, and you just... you know, your pants are down. Feels pretty embarrassing. But I want to kind of maybe get back in the Uryo train. I'd be pretty interested in maybe turning Uryo into the Serum Visions, you know, version of Faithless Brewing 5-Color Niv, where, you know, you really, like, took this card that had been, you know, in this case, 5-Color Niv was a totally new card that you broke. But, you know, Uryo's been around for a while and hasn't done anything. And, you know, that lucky 5-0 that I got kind of inspired a couple of other shells, inspired other people to try. You know, I would love to get back to that, and I think I'm going to pursue get back to that. And it's kind of fun winning with, like, janky cards. It's actually very fun.
And to clarify, we did not break Niv-Mizzet Reborn. We 5-0 with it once and inspired people to pick it up and keep working on it. And then we kept working on it and talking about it. And that's the weird thing. It's like, one of the takeaways I had from working on Tibalt Cascade was that breaking things kind of sucks. It doesn't feel great for anyone involved. But the true achievement for a brewer is maybe creating a new deck that finds people who love it, and, you know, seeing a deck sort of get out there in the world and have a little community of people who play it out there. And, you know, we had some hand in that. But at this point, I mean, we don't even really touch Niv very often. We just like to watch it go out there and do its thing. So maybe that'll be you for Uryo. I saw people took your list, added to Fairy Time Ravelers, and started making top 8 in challenges.
funny how that works, unfortunately.
So as Arun intimated, he is one of the three hosts of the Serum Visions podcast. So another podcast that's focused on brewing, mostly in Modern, or exclusively in Modern.
Yeah, for now we're pretty much Modern. We dip into Legacy once, and I think definitely plan on going back because it's very fun and interesting.
Yeah, so if you're interested in these ideas, this is a podcast people should be checking out, Serum Visions Podcast. If you see any list posted with Jiggy Wiggy as the author on Magic Online, that is also Arun. So just want to make sure people are aware of the presence.
Thank you.
All right, are you guys up for some brewing?
I'd love to.
Absolutely.
So Kaldheim dropped. We're in week 4 now of Kaldheim, or week 1 of the brand new formats. And we want to talk about Angels. We are going to be focusing on Righteous Valkyrie. David, tell us what this card can do.
Righteous Valkyrie, 2 and a white for a 2/4 angel cleric with flying, and it reads, whenever another angel or cleric enters the battlefield under your control, you gain life equal to that creature's toughness. And as long as you have at least 7 or more life than your starting life total, creatures you control get +2/+2. So kind of a unique little package of abilities. We often see life gain as a white mechanic that people deride as not being very powerful. And they've really been upping the sort of reward that they give you if you gain enough life. Or are they, you know, this is a card that rewards you for having a lot of life and gains life itself.
Yeah, very straightforward in many respects. In terms of rules, notes to be aware of, there really aren't any. Just to note that it gains life whenever another angel or cleric enters, so it won't count itself. However, the +2/+2 bonus does apply to itself, so this could be a 4/6 flyer for just 3 mana. A 4/6 flyer for 3 that gives your entire team a double crusade, or double glorious anthem, rather. There are some niche scenarios where your life total could change mid-combat, like if you have a lifelink creature and then suddenly your Righteous Valkyrie survives, but that's not really going to come up. So really it's just a matter of how much does it cost us in terms of actual cards or deck building space, how many weak enablers do we have to play to make this powerful, and is this giving us enough in return? So I'm going to name a few cards that seem to play into this space, and maybe you guys can give me your quick reactions on which of these seem promising to you. So the first set of related cards have to do with this 7 life threshold. Speaker of the Heavens is probably the most important of these because it also has the exact same threshold. So Speaker of the Heavens from M21, 1/1 Visionless Lifelink for a single white mana. If you are at 7 more life than your starting life total, you can tap the Speaker of the Heavens to create an angel token. That's pretty cool. Echoes of Sarah Ascendant, which is a 1/1 lifelink that becomes a 6/6 flying lifelink if you have 30 or more life, so that's actually 10 more life, so not quite the same threshold. But we've seen Sarah Ascendant being used successfully with cards like Martyr of Sands, just to, you know, suddenly go up to 32 on your second turn. There's also cards that just gain you 7 life in one shot, notably Heroes Reunion, printed in Invasion, but was also reprinted in maybe one of the Alara sets or something.
Heroes Invasion is actually legal in Pioneer, so it's got to be a later set than Alara.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Maybe Ravnica? One of those.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dan. I think it is Ravnica. I think it's a Selesnya card. The one thing that's very weird is, so Righteous Valkyrie and Speaker of the Heavens both trigger at 27. But if you're at exactly 27, Righteous Valkyrie actually gives the +2/+2 to Speaker or to Sarah Ascendant, and they do 3 damage and gain 3 life with their attack, bringing you up to 30. So if you're at 27, you attack with one of these guys, it brings you the rest of the way to turn on your Ascendant or whatever.
The threshold, you know, 7 life is interesting that it was on Speakers of the Heavens and now it's on Righteous Valkyrie. I wonder if that might be a new threshold where we start seeing, you know, 7 life above your starting total is going to be this new reward. It'll be standardized.
Yeah, I think they realized that 10 was a pretty big ask. 7 seems to be more reasonable. It's also worth noting that Speaker of the Heavens is a cleric for Righteous Valkyrie, so it does gain you a life when it comes into play, in addition to every time it does damage. I'm not sure that any of these cards is individually powerful, but I like that you now have a density of cards that reward you. So if you're going all in with your Martyr of Sands, often it's like, well, okay, I gained all this life with Martyr of Sands and my Squadron Hawk or whatever. Well, I didn't draw my, you know, it used to be you only had Sarah Ascendant, so that sucks. And then, you know, my opponent is now chipping me off of my 32 life, and I'll be at 23 by the time I draw my Sarah Ascendant. So this means if you draw a Martyr of Sands and you have enough white cards to trigger, you're likely to get at least one of these payoffs, depending on if you want to play all 12, or maybe you just want to play the 2 7 mana ones with like a tutorable Sarah Ascendant card, possibly. That's the thing that interests me most. I don't think any individual card is that powerful.
I think that's a really good point that, you know, we have essentially a rule of 12 now, even better than the rule of 8, where like we do have all these payoffs. I hadn't considered that, but that's really well said.
Or rule of 7 in this case. How are we going to gain the life? If you're not doing Martyr of Sands, you do have other options. Soul Sisters refers to the pairing of Soul Warden and Soul's Attendant. Oriok Champion sees a lot more play in Modern that costs 2 mana but also gains you 1 life. All these cards gain you 1 life whenever any creature comes into play. In Pioneer, we've seen Daxos Blessed by the Sun, 2 mana creature that gains you a life whenever a creature enters the battlefield for you. And there's also a Johnny's Welcome, which is a one-mana enchantment that gains you life whenever a creature enters for you. So that would be one possible way to get your life if you were willing to play a bunch of creatures and lean into this angle. There are, however, more specialized tools. The most important one, I think, is Bishop of Wings. So we better read this one. It's white-white for a human cleric, 1/4. Whenever an angel enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 4 life. Whenever an angel you control dies, create a 1/1 flying spirit creature.
Yeah, worth noting that it is a cleric, so it does trigger Valkyrie if they come down in the quote-unquote wrong order. So Valkyrie and a bishop actually gains you 4 life, getting you pretty close to your limit if you haven't taken that much damage.
My sense is that that's kind of like the core pairing that almost all Righteous Valkyrie lists will start with Bishop of Wings.
It works both ways, right? So you can play this on turn 2 and then you... Oh no, because it's not gonna... Oh yeah, because the angel comes down and this triggers and gives you 4 life. Oh, that's cool.
Yes. So either way you do it, you get the 4 life. So that, yeah, that's something.
There are other angel cards that play into the life gain theme. Resplendent Angel is a 3-mana flying angel. You can pump it up to a 6/6 lifelink. But it also says that at the beginning of your end step, if you happen to gain 5 or more life that turn, you get to make a bonus angel. So that's another one that, prior to the printing of Righteous Valkyrie, that was one of the big payoffs for Bishop of Wings. There are some weirder cards as well. Valkyrie Harbinger is a 6-mana 4/5 flying lifelink that has the text of Angelica Chord sort of stapled onto it. It checks at the beginning of your end step, and if you gained 4 more life, you get another bonus angel. Lyra Dawnbringer, Baneslayer Angel reprint, but it also gives all of your other angels +1/+1 and lifelink. So if this is in your angel deck, you could potentially gain a lot of life that way and get you above the threshold. And David, you pointed out a kind of forgotten card, Scroll of Avacyn. Just a 1-mana artifact, and all it does is allow you to pay 1 and sacrifice it to draw a new card. If you control an angel when you do so, you gain 5 life.
Yeah, this card is super sweet. I used to have a super cool casual deck. I tried to, like, I normally jot all those down in a Word file. I couldn't find it. I've switched computers at work a few times since then. So I couldn't figure out a way to make it work to rebuy it over and over again. But 2-mana, gain 5 life, draw a card is actually an insane way to just win aggro matches. Forget about, you just need an angel in play. There's something there. I didn't have enough time to sort that one out, but that's a card that's worth noticing. We know that there are cards that are like 2-mana, gain 3 life draw. 2-mana, gain 5 life draw is a powerful enough card that they've not yet printed it. And you can even pay an installment, so this can be a turn 1 play if you like. You can play an angel on a later turn. Or even a deck with like Mutavault, for instance. Mutavault, play this on turn 1, next turn, like, activate Mutavault, sack it on their EOT if they're tapped out or something.
Are there other options that I'm missing? So there are some strategies that naturally gain a lot of life. We talked about Martyr of Sands. We talked about Soul Sisters. Those are not really tier archetypes. Heliod Company in Modern is a top tier archetype, and that gains some amount of life. Do you think that will be interested in the Valkyrie?
I'm not sure. That was one of the shells. I do think it's hard. Well, we'll talk about this when we go through the... I have 3 lists to propose in Modern. I think it's hard when you're starting to have things that are triggering to gain life to justify playing like a big beater, no matter how big, no matter how efficient, over the ability to just win at any time. And so I think this can maybe be a way to make your quote-unquote B plan better. I do think one of the reasons why I want to do this week is I think that aggro is going to be everywhere in both Pioneer and Modern after we sort of remove all these endgame conditions. So your default case of playing like a non-boltable creature that just incrementally gains value. Now, life gain doesn't just beat prowess like it does burn, but it does give you a chance to beat prowess. So it's good against prowess without being dominant against it. I just think the default fail case here is something worth considering, where you're just playing an anti-bolt card. That can have this corner case where when you nut draw, you just kill your opponent out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if, you know, if it's into Green White Company. I think kind of like you mentioned, it's just so streamlined. You know, they have a very specific plan and their whole deck is, you know, about accomplishing that plan. And like, you know, oftentimes infinite life is good enough for them to win. But even so, they just have this one extra card where if they have that too, they get infinite life and infinite power. So I think between those two, I don't see company, Heliod Company, at least like the standard Spike Beater Heliod version, being super interested in this.
The other commonly played cards that gain life are Omnath, Locus of Creation, and Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. May he rest in peace.
Pour one out.
So Omnath could get you there.
I do want to point out one card which I will emphasize in Pioneer is the Sorin. I don't know which one it is, but it gives all your creatures lifelink on your turn.
Imperious Bloodlord.
Yeah, I think that card is actually very good. I've had a lot of success with it in various iterations of Pioneer's history. And I think it being sort of effortlessly able to gain you the life the turn it comes into play, let's say you have a couple creatures in play, it also is a card that's key to triggering Resplendent Angel, giving you that turn four play. If you have any other creature with power, Thraben Inspector or Bishop of Wings, and Resplendent Angel in play, it coming down, pinging your opponent, and you attack with your two creatures is five life that turn, either turning on your Righteous Valkyrie or your Resplendent Angel. I think that interaction of Pioneers is very important. And black, as we know, access to Fatal Push in a aggro format, which I think we're close to, or a format where Llanowar Elves is maybe the best turn one play. Fatal Push, very powerful. And Sideboard Thoughtseize obviously interacts with our life gain in a negative way, but is very powerful against the controlling strategies.
I love the idea of Sorin, Imperium, Bloodlord. I've been, you know, always had my eye on him. It's just super interesting, like you said, coming down and giving your team lifelink and then swinging. That can be kind of huge depending on what you're working with. A card that I want to add that I think is interesting is Eilie, Eternal Pilgrim. You know, I'm a Mox Amber addict. I can't drop the Mox Amber. And I love like a black-white Amber shell. That just sounds beautiful to me. And Eilie is definitely the key to that. So Eilie, the Eternal Pilgrim, is black-white for 2/3 Death Touch. Core legendary creature, Cleric. So it does actually, as a Cleric, it will trigger for the Valkyrie, which is pretty sweet. And then it has two abilities, you know. Was this fire design? I don't know, but it's got a huge text box. You do one colorless, sacrifice another creature you control, gain life equal to its toughness, and then one black-white, sacrifice another creature you control, exile target non-land permanent, which is, you know, kind of nuts, but also just being able to sacrifice things and gain life, and maybe you can recast them with Luris. And then, you know, like Sorin is also a legend. This is a legend. I would love for some more legendary angels. But, you know, I think this actually has me pretty interested in a black-white, you know, angel legend shell.
Yeah, I forgot about Eilie. The fact that Eilie is a cleric is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Just for any confused listeners, the Sorin we're talking about is Sorin Vengeful Bloodlord, Imperious Bloodlord. Oh, okay. Oh,
my bad.
He's a Bloodlord. That much is clear.
He's a Lord of Blood, absolutely, yeah.
All right, so we know we're looking for life gain and we're going to be attacking with creatures. As of this recording, Righteous Valkyrie has not 5-0'd yet in either Modern or Pioneer, but nevertheless, we're going to give it our best shot. David, you have a few lists for each format. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in Modern, reborn with the bans here. I have a Band Collected Company Angels list, and it's actually quite similar, so I want to give a shout out to one of our Discord users, Ill Sick Nasty. They found a couple of cards I wasn't even thinking of. I was not thinking of the Changelings. So they're playing Unsettled Mariner, which is a super cool find. And I can't read this, Dan, but what's the 3-mana green card that lets you play off the top of your deck?
Realmwalker. The new
Realmwalker. Yeah, so I don't have those in my list, but that's probably just an oversight on my part. Those are really cool cards that are angels, technically. My list is basically, you know, 4 Noble Hierarch, 4 Aether Vial, 4 Speaker of the Heavens, 4 Bishop of Wings, 4 Oriok Champion. I think this card is just generically going to be very powerful, like I said, an aggro meta. It happens to also be a cleric, so it does gain a life if you have a Righteous Valkyrie in play. And just constantly gaining life over the course of the game. 2 Sera Avenger, 4 Righteous Valkyrie, 4 Skyclave Apparition, and then Geist of St. Traft. I think Geist of St. Traft is really interesting. 1. It's technically a cleric, so it triggers Valkyrie. 2, it puts an angel into play every turn, so it triggers Valkyrie or Bishop of Wings. And then it represents 2 bodies for Righteous Valkyrie to buff. So it actually adds a lot of power, that interaction. And every time it attacks, it's adding more and more life. 4, Collected Company. Normally, I like to add 1 5-mana angel. I actually think Archangel of Thune is just better straight up than Lyra Dawnbringer. Archangel of Thune triggering Oriok Champion, Bishop of Wings, or Righteous Valkyrie is already basically doing the Righteous Valkyrie buff on everything, and it can trigger a bunch of extra times. So I'm not a big believer in Lyra, honestly, and this deck is not playing that many angels. I do think that Skyclave Apparition is just really crucial to this list. I'd want to play 4. It lets you really load up on all your creatures, and you do want creatures to absorb the Plus from Valkyrie or Archangel of Thune, and it lets you basically collect a company for them. So yeah, this is a starting point. So Ilsic Nasty kind of came to some similar conclusions. They are playing four Bishop of Wings. They're playing four Sarah Avenger, two Unsettled Mariner, the Realm Walker. They're playing the Righteous Valkyrie plus Resplendent Angel combo. And then they are playing a Legion Angel with three Legion Angels in the sideboard. I don't think Legion Angel is good enough for Modern. I think sideboard cards are very important in Modern as well. So I get a little nervous spending three of my sideboard slots on 4-3 flyers.
Two quick notes on this build. One is the card Sarah Avenger. This is a card that you cannot play on the first two turns. Is that correct?
First three turns.
My mistake. You can, however, get around that with the card Aethervial. That interaction is built in here in both your list and Ilsic Nasty's list. Aethervial also gives me a lot more hope for a Legion Angel. If I know that a Legion Angel is immune to counterspells, if I can just vial it in and then vial in the subsequent angels that are fetched from the sideboard, I'm a little more confident in that. And I especially like how Ilsic Nasty has the Elidamri's call to go find the Legion Angel. So even though you're dedicating three sideboard slots to a one of in your main deck, you actually have more ways to get access to that card. So I think it's worth considering some of those tools. Maybe not the Legion Angel itself, but Elidamri's Call, maybe that's worth working into your list too, David.
I do agree, though, like that Ilsic Nasty has made the choices you need to make to maximize Legion Angel. And so if it's going to be good enough, it's going to be in a list with Aethervial, Elidamri's Call, and one Legion Angel. I think that shell that they put in there is exactly right. If it's good enough, if it's not good enough at that point, you've done all you can. You've trained your Padawan. You've mastered the Force, and if at that point, if it's just getting bolted or whatever or countered, you know, then that's not your fault. You've done all you can.
I like Geist in this list a lot. You know, it's a legend, so you know maybe Esper Angel Clerics. You know, getting a little closer. But it is my one concern is the only real removal you have is the Skyclave Apparition. Does this deck have a strategy if Geist just gets kind of stonewalled? Like, are you going to just sacrifice the Geist to get your Angel for the bonus? I guess maybe you can, the attack might trigger the Valkyrie and then you can buff your Geist too. I try and play Geist whenever I can. And the big issue I have is, like, without something like Stoneforge Mystic or just a way to clear the path with Geist, sometimes he has to sit on defense, which feels pretty bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think the hope here is that, yeah, between, you know, Archangel of Thune, Righteous Valkyrie, maybe the Noble Hierarch trigger, you can hopefully find a situation where Geist gets to attack. The other hope is also, you know, against some of these, like, red-black shadowless, sometimes that Angel getting in for five or six is just enough. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you're looking for. It's just an evasive threat that they struggle to deal with.
Yep, makes sense.
I'd like to try this list. I think a tweak I will make is I don't want to play the full set of Speaker of the Heavens just because your density of life gain is lower than a dedicated life gain angel deck. You know, because you're expecting that you need to actually have Skyclave Apparitions and interaction, that kind of thing. So your total quantity of angels, like you said, is just not that high. And I'm not convinced that I'm always going to be like at the 7 life threshold. So maybe just like trimming down on those and replacing them with 3-drops. You know, as a Coco Vial deck, I kind of want 12 3-drops just to make my companies really good. Some of those can come from Glass Pool Mimics like you have on the sideboard here, but maybe we should just play some Resplendent Angels just to make the bishops a little better and make the companies a little more exciting.
Yeah, I guess one of my concerns is, you know, we're making a choice to not play the Heliod Ballista combo, so why? Why would we ever do this? So I was really trying to make this deck as much as possible a little bit more resistant to Bolt. So Oriok Champion has not died a bolt. Bishop of Wings, again, I think you're trying to bolt-proof your deck. And Righteous Valkyrie and Geist. So that was my thinking. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Yeah, Speaker of Heavens, obviously, we just talked about how bad 1-1s are or might be in this format. So I think cutting any number of them is probably reasonable. Playing Paths, just so we have more removal. Playing Thalia, not a terrible idea either. How much do you want to lean into the Righteous Valkyrie synergies? How much do you want to lean into a deck that's just a little bit playing quote-unquote better cards, you know, that we know to be tried and true in these colors.
You could also try Restoration Angel instead of Collected Company. You do have enough non-angel targets that it might just be a good way to increase your angel density without losing too much on power.
Yeah, that's a possibility as well. Resto Blinking Geist, since their days together in Standard. All right, so on to the next list. So I have a mono white list that would allow you to splash certain sideboard cards if you wanted, because you can play, you know, like a bunch of fetches and like a one of. This is basically what we've seen similar shells trying to do, which is it's a Heliod Suncrown list that's not playing Collected Company. It is playing more interaction. So you have your three path, you have your four Giver of Ruins. Giver of Ruins also a cleric, worth noting. And then you just have three Righteous Valkyrie. That's kind of your backup plan. Righteous Valkyrie also triggering off of Warriout Champion again. I think this card is crucial. Three Luminarch Aspirant. Luminarch Aspirant happens to be a cleric, mainly for party synergies in Standard. And then you're just playing your like normal value hits. You got four Heliod, four Ranger Captain of Eos. Ranger Captain can fetch either Walking Ballista or Giver of Ruins. Four Skyclave Apparition. I think it's the best white card they've printed in a long time. So this is not a Righteous Valkyrie list. It's a Righteous Valkyrie if they disrupt your combo or pie the needle your combo, etc. This is a card that buffs up all your quote-unquote lesser creatures, is the theory, when your plan A fails.
I had a chance to play this list without the Righteous Valkyries when... I forgot what card we were testing.
I think we were testing the 1-1. Weren't we testing Speaker of the Heavens? Or were we actually testing Aspirant?
It was Aspirant, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And I found that I wasn't getting my life total that high. So I'm not sure that these surrounding creatures can reliably get us up to 7 above our starting life total.
Yeah, that could be the case.
Yeah, this looks a lot like kind of almost the stock Heliod, like mono white Heliod list, right? With, I think, maybe the Righteous Valkyrie and like you have maybe 7 or 8, I guess, spots kind of flipped. I lose to decks like these all the time. Like, gaining life is a huge pain.
And yeah, I was going to say, I've lost to decks like this myself.
I hate Heliod. It's just like, it's down on the battlefield. Like, how do you get rid of that? And also, Ranger Captain just ruins. Ranger Captain just wrecks me all the time. It's just, hate that card. But yeah, I mean, it looks, I mean, you know, I think kind of echoing what Dan said, I'm a little, like, is in the 7 flex or like 7 to 10 flex spots that we have, like, is Righteous Valkyrie with a little extra interaction, is that going to be better than, you know, like possibly just more things that dig towards the combo?
Yeah, I mean, my instinct is no, but I think starting from a place where we have a deck that we know is reasonable and then this is just kind of an add-on, mm-hmm. is a place I also like to try.
Yeah, definitely. I'm all on board with that. I do love cutting good cards and adding bad cards. That is,
yeah, right, exactly,
one of the more enjoyable parts of Magic for me.
So the third list you have here, I'm more confident that I'll get my Righteous Valkyrie bonus.
Yeah, so this is the Modern Soul Sisters. These are shells that at times we've been frustrated with, but again, we got the 4 Ariad Champion. I do think that card is important, as I've said. This is a list that I think really pays you off for Squadron Hawk. So Squadron Hawk is a card that helps turn on our Martyr of Sands. And then it's also just a bunch of bodies that Righteous Valkyrie turns into something meaningful. We've done this before where we've gotten our Squadron Hawks in hand and we want to find a way to make them something that matters. And Valkyrie turning them all into Phantom Monsters is actually really powerful. It's hard for an opponent to deal with a 2-mana draw 3, and each of those is a 2-mana Phantom Monster. And like I said, we kind of have the rule of 12. We are playing the full amount of payoff. So if we get our life total up, Sarah Ascendant or Speaker of Heavens or Righteous Valkyrie turns on, we have the 4 Ranger Captain of Eos to find our one-ofs. We also are playing like the corner case combo in here. So we have 2 Walking Ballista, 2 Heliod. What we don't have is a lot of interaction. So we're not playing any Path to Exile, which always makes me a little nervous. And we're leaning on our Skyclave Apparition as a source of white pips, a body to absorb +1/+1 counters.
Here's a thought. What if you cut the Heliod and Ballista and you add 4 of the white force, first force of virtue? I was going to say, a little disappointed to see 4 Squadron Og and no force of virtues.
It's certainly an interaction we've enjoyed before. I'm not opposed to it.
Just for science, we got to cut the Heliod Ballista from this list and see if the Righteous Valkyrie can carry this by itself.
The Force of Virtue is also very interesting because we do have 8 1-mana lifelink creatures. So buffing those is not a trivial thing at all.
Yeah, and I think another way to find the slots is to trim some number of Sarah Ascendant. I think that card is going to underperform in a lot of stages of the game. But I do like having some so that you can go find it off the Ranger Captain of Eos when you're ready. I could even go down to 2 or 1 copy of Sarah Ascendant. And if you want to use those slots on path, you can. Or you could even just like go a little bit bigger and play the regular Ranger of Eos that gets 2-1 drops.
Yeah, I like sneaking one of those in there. I only have 23 lands here. The other thing you could do is play 24 lands and make one of them a value kind of card as well.
So these lists all make sense to me as a way to at least give Righteous Valkyrie a shot in Modern. But Modern is a punishing format, so we'll find out quickly, I think, whether, even if we get the 4-6 every time with the bonus, if we're still losing, that's going to be cause for concern. But I do think in Pioneer, that kind of sequence is actually a lot more powerful and relative to what the rest of the metagame is doing.
Yeah, so let's go to Pioneer. So I said I was really excited to play Soren Vengeful Bloodlord. This is the list I'm most excited about. So this list is taking advantage of the Bishop of Wings interaction Dan was describing. We are playing the Four Resplendent Angel for Righteous Valkyrie. I'm a little more comfortable doing that in Pioneer because it's not a Lightning Bolt format. So the fact that they can't effortlessly trade one mana for our three mana is very encouraging. Like I said, Soren Vengeful Bloodlord, we're playing it as a three of, interacts very positively with Angel of Thune, Righteous Valkyrie, and Resplendent Angel. It also is really good, it sounds crazy to say it, with Thraben Inspector. it pluses to 6 loyalty on the first turn it comes into play, and then Thraben Inspector not only draws you a card, it also blocks. So it's like a -1 stop for power or whatever, you're blocking their Bonecrusher Giant every turn. And then you're just drawing cards, and eventually you draw your Angel of Thune or whatever, and then Thraben Inspector is a card that also just absorbs all these counters. When Righteous Valkyrie's in play, all of a sudden, it trades with Bonecrusher Giant. When Archangel of Thune is in play and you plus Soren and ding them, all of a sudden, all your creatures get +1/+1. So the shell here is something I'm interested in playing, and we're playing the best black interaction, 4 Fatal Push, 3 Thoughtseize. You could even take away a couple Thoughtseize. I've only been playing aggro since the bans, so maybe you don't want Thoughtseize main at all, and you want something else, some kind of other mitigating factor, maybe another card that draws, maybe Aspirant is a powerful card, maybe more Charming Princes to blink Thraben Inspectors and Skyclave Apparitions. There's a lot of variability there. I do think you want the 4 Fatal Push, though. 4 Fatal Push, 4 Skyclave Apparition is a good amount of interaction.
I like this deck a lot. I think it looks sweet. You know, I think we just talked about it. I'm a huge fan of Soren Vengeful Bloodlord. I also think that card is like sweet and hasn't quite had its time to shine. You know, being a War of the Spark Planeswalker, it's got to be a little busted, right?
Exactly. It just pluses a 6 loyalty. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and this list looks sweet. I think I definitely want to take something like this. I have a soft spot for black white. I don't entirely know why, but I do enjoy it.
The only card I don't believe in is Lone Rider. I'd like to just see that be something else. Not that I don't like Lone Rider, but this list is pretty short on cards that just straight up gain 3 life. So maybe those are just more Charming Princes.
Yeah. It is kind of nice that Lone Rider gains life with First Strike. So if you have an Angel of Thune in play, it actually changes all the combat math. I have gotten an opponent with that before, which always feels amazing.
And you find that Archangel of Thune is better than Lyra Dawnbringer as your top end?
Yeah, I honestly don't think it's close, especially if you're playing Soren. Soren already gives your creatures lifelink on your turn, so Lyra's ability is not needed. And Angel of Thune coming into play and immediately triggering, again, Resplendent Angel or Bishop of Wings, is already just adding so much power to play naturally. As soon as it becomes a 4-5 lifelink, it's over for red decks. They cannot do 5 damage easily at all. They can do 4 with, you know, Chandra and a few other effects. But that's basically the end of the game. So, all right. So continuing on, Dan and I both have a sick love, I don't know why, for Kalia, Zenith Seeker. Kalia is a cleric. So she triggers Righteous Valkyrie and she finds Resplendent Angel, Righteous Valkyrie. She finds Legion Angel. So we can play that as a 2 of, but see it a lot more often. I don't mind spending the sideboard slots as badly. This deck is kind of a similar shell to what we just looked at. The major difference is to make sure our Kalia is hitting, we need basically 2 to 4 of either Demon or Dragon. I chose Demon because I wanted the deck to be mostly white-black. And the card I chose was Dream Devourer. Just a quick reminder, this is a card from Kaldheim, 1 and a black for an 0/3. It gives every card in your deck that does not have Foretell, Foretell. And you can Foretell for 2 colorless, and then you can cast that spell for its mana cost -2 later from Foretell. One of the things I think this does is, obviously, it's a blocker, if that matters. But it allows you to play a deck that's kind of clunky. You know, you got Lyra Dawnbringer, Archangel of Thune, you got all these 4 mana spells. It basically lets you like give away some tempo on your turn three to gain it back later in the game, where you get to play like in the same turn a Righteous Valkyrie for one mana plus a three mana angel and get your trigger on that turn. With this amount of angels and demons, you're drawing about 1.2 cards from your Kalia. So that's pretty good. 3 mana, 3/3 that draws a little bit more than a card. Your mana is going to be bad, but not horrifically so. You're probably trading, you know, a little bit of late game power for a little bit less consistency in terms of your mana cost. So if you're interested in trying out Kalia, this is a shell I would at least start with. I don't think the numbers here are locked in, but I still think you do want the Righteous Valkyrie Resplendent Angel combo with your like Sorin plus Lyra Archangel. That top end is still, I think, very powerful, especially against aggro decks.
Dream Devourer is a demon cleric. I don't know if you
mentioned. Yep, it is a cleric.
So it will trigger off the Righteous Valkyrie. And I think that's important. Yep. There's also a 3-mana demon cleric called Taborax, Hope's Demise. Draws you a card whenever a cleric you control dies, and it also grows when that happens. Would you consider one of that just to get a little more value out of Kalia?
The problem I had was that it's a 3-mana card with 2 toughness that doesn't do anything when it comes into play. So it dies to not just Stomp, but it does die to Shock, Wild Slash, etc.
Hmm.
Also dies to just 4-mana. The green Hydra is like ubiquitous in all the green decks. So the play pattern of you getting zero value and being way behind in tempo is very common amongst multiple colors. I keep looking at it, though. I'm just like, oh, man, why did they make it so weak? Like, I don't understand. What happened to Fire Design when we need it? Like, this legendary demon is, like, worse than uncommon demons. It's just crazy.
I really like the Dream Devourers in this list. I was actually on Twitter. Like, I've seen a couple people talking about how Dream Devourer and Standard, like, really stood out to them and was much better than they thought. Because, like you said, it's like the gives you a little tempo, but it can kind of be considered ramp. Where, like, you know, if, for instance, in Standard, a lot of people will go Dream Devourer next turn, foretell Vorontlex, and you can cast it on turn 4. And, you know, you just put your 6th drop on the battlefield 2 turns ahead of the game in Standard, which is pretty significant. So as a ramp piece like that, you know, I think it's a super cool idea, and I'm definitely very interested to see what happens with this deck.
I imagine that Dream Devourer would play nicely if you had a bunch of random 1-mana spells, because it lets you break up your expensive things into installments, so there could be a turn where you only have 3 mana available and you want to foretell something and do something else for 1 mana. This deck is a little bit higher on just like the expensive stuff, and there's not that much to make use of odd mana lying over. There's the 4 Fatal Push, 2 Inspectors. You could add more Thought Seizes, more Inspectors.
Yeah, you can. The question is always like, how good do you want Kalia to be? And, you know, the trade-offs there are tough. You know, Kalia is making you add a whole third color, and it's making you play a bunch of cards. You need to have enough angels for Kalia to be consistently drawing a card, or you shouldn't play it at all. It's possible, I do agree, that you could just make a deck devoted to Dream Devourer. I think that the card is powerful enough to justify that. Maybe it would not then be in a Kalia shell. I think that's also possible. All right, and then on to my last deck, which is a white-green Collected Company Angels shell. Similar in some ways to the Shell and Modern, only, you know, missing Aetherveil and Noble Hierarch. But our 1-drops are Speaker of Heavens, Thraven Inspector. Our 2-drops are Bishop of Wings, Luminarch Aspirant, Charming Prince, Lone Rider. And then we've got the Resplendent Angel, Righteous Valkyrie, Skyclave Apparition. I just think these are the best 3-drops in white. We're playing Collected Company. That's like our card advantage engine, our 2-for-1. And then, like I said, I think Archangel of Thune in these kind of shells is just super powerful. I prefer that strongly to Lyra in any configuration that we're proposing.
2 cards I want to highlight. One is the double-faced land / cleric, the Skyclave cleric. I've had this card cast against me a bunch of times this week. It's like surprisingly good. Just a 1/3 that gains 2 life.
Yeah, and it is a cleric, obviously. It's in the name. But if you cast it with Righteous Valkyrie out, you actually gain 5 life, which is not trivial.
So I'm going to single out Lone Rider again. Like, maybe those should all just be Skyclave clerics. You know, that way you can't really flood. You can't be screwed.
Yeah, I'm pretty sympathetic to that, I think.
Second is that I noticed you've resisted proposing anything with Heroes Reunion. I'm going to give a quick shout out to Will Urker, who's, you know, a brewer we like to follow. And he's been posting about his Heroes Reunion shenanigans in Pioneer for some time now. And I think he said he got a 4-1 with an attempt at a Speaker of the Heavens Righteous Valkyrie list that just tries to just gain 7 in one go with the Heroes Reunion. This surrounding core would be, like, I think the kind of deck that would attempt that.
Yeah, I don't agree with some of his choices here. I actually got to chat a bit with Will. We played, we'll talk about this, in the Burgie League. It did not go so well for him. He wasn't playing this list, though. So. But yeah, he posted some meme-ish pictures of stuff before when Pioneer was kind of jacked up. Now that it's free, I think he's been trying all kinds of crazy stuff, which is exciting that we are attracting brewers back to the format. So hopefully he keeps working on this. Yeah, it's exciting to hear he had success. I get a little nervous about some of the choices in this deck. Even some of his screenshots of his opponent just make slightly different decisions. He doesn't get to do the thing. it's interesting. I'm just not a believer in this card. But maybe it's worth it. And especially against aggro, you know, maybe the fail case is just, it's functionally a draw too, right? It just absorbs lightning strike and a lightning strike.
Yeah, that's true. I do feel like there's a ton of red in Pioneer right now. And they are just like throwing wizard lightnings at your face.
Yeah.
Okay, well, between these, I guess this is 6 decks that we've got in front of us. Where do you think you want to start?
I'm going to be playing the Orzhov Angels list in Pioneer. I'm super excited to try it out. I really love Sorin Vengeful Bloodlord and stopped playing it for a while when they banned Ballista on me. But now I've got all these other life gain triggers. It's go time.
Arun, do any of these jump out at you as particularly promising?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with David. I love the Orzhov Angels list. It looks pretty sweet. I'm also a sucker for Sorin. I might put my own little spin, you know, try and fit Eile and Mox Amber in there. You know, maybe go with an Esper list for Geist also. Kind of going with the synergies. But definitely something along those lines. You know, I think this Orzhov Angels list looks sweet. And I would probably start here before I go butchering it and adding terrible cards.
I feel like I have to give Martyr of Sands a chance, so I'll be starting in Modern and working off something like this shell you've got here with the Ranger Captain of Eos. Not sure how much interaction is going to be necessary. We'll have to see how the format shakes out, but I think you're absolutely right, David, that Oriok Champion is just going to be really super well positioned in the main deck, so I'm hoping that will carry me to the 5-0.
And I mean, Oriok Champion getting buffed up by Righteous Valkyrie is like a huge deal. I mean, normally what happens is you kind of stare across the board from each other against these red-black decks. As soon as it becomes a 3-3, you just start getting in there, and the shadow decks die very quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, the hidden benefit of these life gain decks is that they can just never cast the Scourge of the Skyclaves, because you'll...
Yes, exactly.
You know, you'll be hovering around 20 or threatening to go above 20 all the time.
I bet that feels good.
Turn Martyr of Sands into a removal spell.
All right, that is our task to test for the week coming up. We will take a short break. When we return, we will tell you a little bit about how our Burgie testing went from last week.
All right, as was mentioned, our card of the week last week was Burgie, God of Storytelling. / Harnfell, Horn of Bounty. So just a quick reminder, Burgie is 2 and a red for a 3-3 legendary god. She reads, whenever you cast a spell, add red mana to your mana pool. Until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. There's also some flavor text that says creatures you control can boast twice during each of your turns rather than once. And then the backside is Harnfell, Horn of Bounty, which is 4 and a red for a legendary artifact. Discard a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn. So Dan, you and I both tried Burgie Showdown. You played the raw unfiltered version of mine and found a bunch of mistakes, and I was able to sort of iterate on that. So why don't you just tell me your impressions first? So this was a deck that was trying to take advantage of the fact that Showdown of the Scalds is going to allow you to cast a bunch of spells in a turn, and Burgie was going to just keep pumping red mana into your mana pool as you cast them. So you're really going to get all the value out of the Showdown.
Yeah, so I made just one tweak from the list that we talked about on air last week, which was that I cut the Warlord's Fury. So you built it with both Crash Through and Warlord's Fury. The idea being that those cards work very well with Runaway Steamkin. They're kind of free with Burgi, and they can give you some spectacular sequences with Showdown of the Skulls. But in exchange for playing those cantrips, those are slots that might have gone to interaction. So I wanted to hedge a little bit and play Wild Slashes instead. So I went with 4 Crash Through, 4 Wild Slash. When I took this through a league, the very first game was just gorgeous. I did the thing. I had a Burgi and a Showdown and a Steamkin that I'd like picked off their creatures with Wild Slash. It was just against a red deck, and it was just like a landslide victory, and this was so sweet. Everything exactly as you drew it up. But it didn't really... That was one of the last games that I won with the deck. I had like hard-fought battles every round. I mean, Pioneer was actually pretty sweet, but I felt like I kept stumbling. Like the deck just couldn't get out of its own way. I was just like a couple lands short, a couple interactive spells short, and I ended up going 1-4. I lost to, you know, another red deck. I lost to a really sweet Magda Dwarves deck that one of our Faithless Family Discord members, Raptor1551, had been playing with, and he was able to beat me with the staunch shield mates. And I also lost a game, I think, against a control deck where just Teferi bouncing the horn was a little bit too problematic. Mainly just had a few turns of missing the key land drops and realizing that instead of having an exciting showdown to pull me ahead, I was just like falling behind on board and just stumbling over my own curve issues. So my overall impression was that like there is something very powerful here, but I felt like Showdown was the most powerful card, and that the parts that were underperforming were the smaller red creatures, like the Swift Spears, the Crash Throughs. Even the Steamkin was having a hard time surviving. Even like the Abbot of Kirrell Keep was sometimes worth a card, sometimes it was just a 2-1. My hit rate on that was 50% or so, which is like only okay. So I left thinking like maybe this needs to just be like a reimagined as a Showdown control mid-range deck, something akin to the Mardu list that Damon highlighted as his pick of the week last week, and with a higher land count, maybe 24 lands.
Yeah, so I took some notes from you and cut a bunch of different cards. So I left only 4 Soul Scar Mage as my one drops. I only played 2 Crash Throughs. I did go up to 24 lands. So I added a Mana Source, and then I added a Spike Field Hazard. I added a 3rd Shepherd. I think I cut a Burgi, and I added a 4 mana Chandra, Torch of Defiance. The list actually felt pretty good for me. I did lose to Mono Green, which they're now playing Borinclex instead of Karn. That is a massive improvement, and I cannot emphasize how insane Borinclex is against this deck. Your Showdown triggers never happen. If you have Soulscar Mage in play, since all the damage gets done as tokens, you actually do less damage with all of your spells.
Oh my gosh.
Your Chandra comes into play without any loyalty, basically, and she never can add any. She can't even minus. So that was brutal. Your Steamkin doesn't get any +1/+1 counters. It hashtag felt bad, man. Like that wasn't cool. I lost a very close match to blue-white control. The horn won me game 2 and would have won me game 3, except for they just drew the nuts right when it mattered. I beat mono-black vampires. I beat Will Urker on mono-white humans. And lost to green-red dinosaurs because I could never kill their turn 1 mana creature, and they crushed me with their giant dinosaurs. I do agree with you, Dan. Like, I think the deck is actually really mana-hungry. I have a proposed update here where I've actually got 25 mana sources, and I do think playing extra Spike Field Hazards as mana sources is very useful, because I do think that the best thing you can do right now in Pioneer is lead on Mana Elf. So you want to be able to nip that in the bud, and the extra mana sources, the deck's just super mana-hungry. I also went up to 3 Chandra, Torch of Defiance. I think I was a little chilled from my experiences in Pioneer the last year. Chandra's actually really good now. Every time I played her, she was awesome. You can plus her to play a bunch of different spells, including Stomp, Abbot, or the Steamkin. Obviously, minusing her is big because we don't have that many spells that do 4 damage. Yeah, so I actually think there's potential for this list. I am going to try it again this week after some tweaking. Burgi herself was good. She wasn't quite as good as Steamkin for me, but I was never sad to draw her. In post-war games against control, getting to play her as Horn was actually like incredible. And if she lives, I mean, it is a removal check like you were describing last week, Dan. Like, if they don't kill her, I had turns where like, I played Burgi, they didn't kill her. I play a 1-drop, that replaces itself. I play Chandra, that replaces itself. She pluses, and then I play Bone Crusher from an adventure. that's just like an insane turn. Like, you just added like 8 mana worth of stuff to the board, and you didn't have to do anything special. That wasn't some nut draw with Showdown of the Skalds, etc. You've got all these blockers now for your Chandra, and she's going to win the game even if you don't draw a Showdown. So, Burgi impressed me. Showdown was good when we were at parity. I felt like if I was behind, it was too slow.
Actually, I'm kind of surprised by that. You know, I would imagine that drawing 4 cards is a great way to get ahead, but it's just... I'm guessing it just costs 4 mana, and then you can't really do the cards until next turn, and that's just a little too slow if you're behind?
Yeah, one, they can kind of plan around the specific cards, like if you have removal or whatever. The other thing is, we're not a deck that's playing super efficient one-for-one removal. So, like, I think what Dan's intimating is, if you're going to tap out and play that and maybe be a little behind, you can catch up if your card is, like, Fatal Push, you know, trading 1 mana for 3 mana.
Yep.
And, you know... Terminate like effect, you know, 2 mana for your 4 mana kind of a thing.
Yep.
But Vorinclex, you cannot be. Don't just forget about that.
I really liked Chain to the Rocks as a sideboard card, and I see you've moved one to the main deck in your proposed update. I think that card is actually super well positioned for what a kind of mainly red Showdown deck is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I only had problems with white mana one game where I was sitting with a Shepherd and Showdown in my hand and like 6 lands in play. And so it's going to happen very rarely, but, you know, not that often.
I think we had different assessments of Runaway Steamkin. If it does live and does its thing, it's truly spectacular, but it is a vulnerable card, one that can underperform if the opponent has the right interaction. Burgi, I'm not really sure. I mean, I think you're absolutely right that it's sturdier than I expected. 3-3 for 3 is... likely to survive, weird as that is. Like, it's not going to get Wild Slashed. It's probably not going to get Fatal Pushed either. It's a weird card to have in play because it always leaves you with an extra mana at the end. Whatever you cast, you have a red left over, and there's no way to actually put that towards anything in this deck. And I'm just, like, wondering if there's a card that we can play that would make use of that extra mana, or if it's just not worth it to even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when you do your Burgi thing, that's, you've already done your thing. I have a screenshot here of me basically winning the game on turn 4 through removal spell, Thoughtseize, and Kalidus. So that's the kind of thing that Steamkin does. If Steamkin survives to the second trigger of Showdown, the game is over. That is the most powerful thing you can do in this format, period. I'm playing like 15 mana worth of stuff on turn 4. I mean, you can just see that my opponent throws down. I'm about to put a Chandra... both halves of a Bonecrusher Giant and remove his creature from play and play another guy and do a bunch of damage to him. I mean, it's just insane. And then next turn I get to add counters again. I mean,
wow.
But I guess what you want is a deck that can go 1 mana spell that trades card for card. You can decide what that is. 2 mana spell that goes card for card. 3 mana spell that trades for a card. And then you want to play Showdown. So if I'm playing a 2 mana spell that absorbs a push, I don't hate that. Because if we're at neutral and I play a 4 mana draw 4, then I feel great. Especially if one of my 4 could be either a Shepherd to blink it back or a Burgi that lets me turn those into immediate advantage.
Yeah. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing how this week's testing goes with the Burgi in the brand new Pioneer metagame. There's definitely something here, but we have more to learn.
Yeah. I think the Showdown of the Skalds plus the Shepherd blinking it is something, no matter what. It might not be with Burgi, it might not be with Steamkin, but there's something there. Obviously, people are using that in Standard, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah, I'd love to just do it with Adventures, like even just Edgewall Innkeeper and Naya Adventures.
Yeah, and maybe that is the path forward. So we are lucky enough to have Arun here. He has tried a bunch of Burgi Song of Creation decks in Modern, and Dan was brave enough to take my terrible version of that. Into a league. The major note here, Dan, is that you did this after Uro was banned. So I think my proposed list had some Uro in it. Arun has played Shell with Uro in it as well. You had to run it naked, so to speak. You did not get to play the giant god.
Yeah. So I want to turn this section over to Arun, and maybe you can kind of coach me through what I did wrong. Because I went 1-4, and I just like couldn't figure this deck out. So what's your assessment of this build, Arun? Maybe you can sort of explain the structure to it and maybe point out where I made mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think this build looks pretty fine without Uro. I think, honestly, I'm going to just come out and say it. I think your mistake is that you played this after Uro was banned.
You stupid fool.
Like, you know, I love Song. I love Song. It gives me that Cheerios vibe where you just start drawing cards and you kind of, you know, I've killed myself with Song a bunch of times. I've cast I've cast Thassa's Oracle, and then I've killed myself a song with Thassa's Oracle on the stack. You know, just that song is a wonderful card like that. But the big issue is that, kind of like what you've said previously and what you and David have mentioned with Song, it's very hard to find a deck that can win with Song and also win without Song. Because Song puts extreme deck building requirements on your deck. And honestly, I think what happens is that Uro was the actual bridge in that case. Where, you know, like, Uro kind of ramps it out. Especially, like, my list would also play 4 Ren and 6 because I'm a D-Gen. And I just love Ren and 6 because that card is absolutely busted. And is also insanely busted with Uro. But between, you know, like, kind of Uro Kata, Uro ramps you. It kind of gets you a little extra life. And then it stays in your graveyard and you can play it later. It's also got the great Emery synergy. So I think 1-4 is probably a pretty solid result. You know, like, the version that I like to play, you know, I like to just play Yorion mostly. I don't know if it's actually better. It's probably not, because why are you playing 80 cards if you're a Song Creation deck? But I just like to stuff, I like to cram more cards in. And also, you know, I just like to have a companion. And just kind of reminds me of the good old days when we had Astrolabe and Kinnan and that fun stuff. But yeah, I mean, the biggest sin is just not having Uro. And so now you're, like, if you look at this deck list, you know, like Mox Amber, Bauble, Gilded Goose, you know, like Kinnan. Like, if you don't draw your Song of Creation, what happens to the deck? Like, what are you doing if you don't draw Song of Creation? And, like, if your answer is, I'm going to beat down with Kinnans and Gilded Goose, like, that's definitely not ideal. I might answer these a little bit more. I do think that Burgee plus Song of Creation is kind of nuts. You know, maybe it'll be more of a Pioneer thing now, because Modern's just so fast and so unforgiving. And, you know, also the control decks get to play Force of Negation, which also makes Song of Creation very, very sad. And once again, without Song and without Uro, this deck is just kind of all air, which is rather unfortunate. But this is, you know, like, I've had Uro in my list, and I've still got my 1-4s and my 2-3s. So, you know, I think the unfortunate that Uro happened to be banned, like, the week that you're going to take this deck out. But I'm not... You know, I think it looks solid for what it is. I mean, the one thing, like, if we were to pursue this in the future, when I was first messing with Song Creation lists, what kind of came up to me, I just added in 3 Noxious Revival because I'm like, oh, I think this card is, like, kind of busted, and it's true with Song. And as I was just going and playing through, I realized that Noxious Revival actually creates a loop with itself in Song, where if you have 2 Noxious Revivals, you can Noxious Revival targeting the Noxious Revival. You draw 2 cards, Revival goes on top. Rinse and repeat, and you kind of get a pseudo Yawgmoth's Bargain, which was pretty interesting to me. And I think the issue is, like, you wind up, because Revival goes on top, you actually wind up only drawing 1 new card, because one of the cards is Revival, so it kind of becomes a worse bargain. But with a Burgee out, for instance, I think that loop will just, like, win you the game instantly. There's also fun cards like Weather the Storm, which also is really good with that synergy, because then you gain a whole bunch of life, and that life probably lets you go infinite with your Noxious Revival, even if you don't have Burgee. So I think, you know, I do like this list. I think in the future it might be interesting to just focus on the combo. You know, like, honestly, maybe even cut cards like Ren and 6. Like, maybe Emery isn't quite needed anymore. You know, like, maybe you could still do Kinnan and Mox Ambers. But one of the big draws of Emery was, like, it helps you find your Uro and mill over cards, and good for that. And now that we don't have Uro, you know, like, Emery's not super free. You have to play Mox Ambers. You have to play Baubles. You have to play Drums. You know, they're not the worst cards. But, like, once again, without Uro, They're definitely not the most ideal cards you want to see. I do like Ox, though. How was Ox for you?
Well, that was my solution to the Uro problem. I would just slap an Ox of Agonis on it and hope I draw it. I mean, I had games where I was just like, I have literally nothing going on. I have a Kinnan and some Drums. I'll just spin and hope I hit an Ox. But there's only one, so one main, one side. I did not hit the Ox. So I just had error.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, Kinnan hitting Burgee still, but that's the one thing is, Springleaf Drum is honestly, like, drives me absolutely crazy, because especially with Kinnan, the floor is high, or no, sorry, the ceiling is high, you know, like, some of the most busted starts you can get involve Kinnan and Springleaf Drum, but on the flip side, you know, like, anytime you draw 2 drums, that's really bad, because you can, like, never use them, and anytime they kill all your dudes with the drum, while you have a drum out, it's especially bad too, so I just, You know, normally, like, an Earl kind of makes up with that. Like, you know, if you zero-sum game, if you play good cards, you can play bad cards. But now we're kind of out one of the best cards in the format and one of the best cards in our deck. And all we are left with is, you know, we don't get any great cards to replace it. So, yeah, I just think this was really, really, really unlucky timing. And I don't think this reflects on you. I think this looks like a solid, you know, it's a solid deck list. And I think besides the Uros, this is actually, I'm not very good at de-Yorifying decks, even when they should be. So I just normally ask Zach to de-Yorify the deck for me. And he actually came up with a 60-card list that looks super similar to this, except it has four Uro and I think like three Ren and six. Which is, you know, slightly different. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a good try, but I don't know how much, honestly. It's really sad. Like, I don't know how much motivation I personally have to keep messing with these kind of shells without Uro, because it's hard to just get, you know, 1/4 does not feel super great. It's not great for self-confidence. It's not the most fun. Like, when you just get totally trashed and it's like, wait, like, why am I not doing these busted things that my opponent's doing while I just have a whole bunch? I have 2 Mox Embers and a Springleaf Drum and an EE. Like, great, you know, like that feels bad.
My final match was against Infect. They were like deciding whether to go for it and kill me with their Ink Moth or not. And I'm like clutching a handful of cards and leaving all my mana up. And I'm like, if they can see my screen, my hand is like amber, drum. It's like a complete blank. Like, maybe I can bluff. But once I had to start chomping with the Gilded Goose, they knew it was over. I'll post the list that I played, but play at your own peril. I think I was just like off a little bit on my numbers. The land count felt wrong, and like the air count felt a little bit too high. I think I needed to play all four Emery just because it's something to do. It like actually draws cards and finds your interaction, which is just Engineered Explosives and Walking Ballista, but at least that's something. 18 lands didn't quite feel like enough. I lost the game just because I didn't have a fifth shock land, so my fetches went dead one turn too soon against the control deck. Lost a game where I was really relying on Bergy to like come down as the horn and recoup my card advantage, but they had a force of negation for it, and then I just was out of luck.
Yep.
So it was interesting. You know, tweak some numbers here, and you can maybe make this into a 2-3 deck or something like that.
I've had very, very similar experiences. You know, like same feels bad, same things. Like it's not. I don't think it's you. I don't think it's like you as a brewer. I think it's just this shell is a little sketchy without Uro, unfortunately.
Before I put the deck away, I'll just say that Bergy was an interesting card to have, and it was cool to just see how when you get the song down, you dig towards the Bergy, and as soon as you land Bergy, it's over. You cannot fizzle at that point. I mean, mathematically you can, but you just won't. You'll eventually convert your red mana into blue via drums or, you know, I left 2 Chromatic Stars in. That's enough. So that was pretty cool, but I don't think you need that many Bergies. I think 2 would have been enough. I just wanted to draw it more often and see what would happen.
Kind of the other one direction that I've thought of taking these is, you know, like Song Creation plus Grinding Station and Breach has always been pretty curious to me because there's some slight synergy there. And then Commune with the Gods kind of ties them together because in these lists you don't have card draw, so you know your goal was to how are you going to find your Song Creation. Once again, you know, it used to be Uro helping you draw towards it, but now we don't have that. But Commune with the Gods that digs 5 and finds any enchantment, it has a good synergy with Breach and with Song of Creation. It also had great synergy with Uro, but we don't have that anymore. But just maybe that could be one thing to consider. It's like you might just have to go for the more busted route and maybe cut a little bit of the fluff down and add the grinding Breach combo, and you just kind of have a couple of angles of attack. I do like that Breach and Song of Creation play on different axes where Song is, you know, drawing cards and spells, and then Breach is a graveyard. So if they want to attack one or the other, unless it's an Archon of Emeria, you're okay. You know, I take these shells, I lose to Eidolon because we don't have removal. I lose to Archon of Emeria so many times. It's just there's a lot of holes in this deck, and you know, like you need to run fluff in order to have synergy for Emery and Song and all those things, but then you lose removal and then you just lose to random hate cards.
I scooped a game because my clever opponent cast Narset on turn 3 and I had lots in the entire 75, so that was that. We move on. So, our closing thoughts on Bergy from the testing we've been able to do so far. What do you think, David?
I think Bergy is an interesting card. It's not a raw power card, right? It's a card that relies a lot on synergy. It slots well into decks that want to play a lot of spells. But the problem is normally if you're playing a lot of spells, you're often winning those games. So, you know, it has to be, you know, specifically interacting with cards with the storm effect, cards like a song like you're talking about. Showdown of the Scalds, right? It's giving you those cards for less than what they should cost, but only for a limited amount of time. So Bergy helps you, you know, realize all that as material advantage. The problem is, do you have to play, like Arun is saying, too many bad cards to get the value from it? And then what happens when you don't draw it? So I think it's still a puzzle to be worked on. It wouldn't surprise me if at some point in the future there were enough tools surrounding it that this was the key piece. The key cog to a deck that was very powerful or even broken in Pioneer or Modern. But I don't think we're there just yet.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Bergy is definitely a powerful card and a busted card, but just as of now, I don't think we have the tools. But, you know, I think David's on spot on the head. Wizards will mess up and they will print something that, like, gets busted with this effect, and then this card will probably be busted until something in it gets banned.
I enjoyed having Bergy in play. Paying 3 for it in Pioneer is like, okay, in Modern I didn't really want to have to pay 3 for it. I would love to just unearth it and win that turn. So maybe that's the future. Or maybe even like Heartless Summoning and then Bergy and Ox can be the payoff for that.
Oh.
There's definitely a Homes. Ooh. I'd love to try the Waste Not Shell. I just didn't have time this week.
Yeah.
I kind of like that though. Play Bergy for 1 mana and then Ox for 2 and refill your hand.
Yeah.
Just maul to it. The Ox is going to pitch your hand anyway.
Yeah, that's Heartless. That's actually a genius idea, Heartless Summoning. I love that idea.
Yeah, never pay full price for cards. That's my one takeaway from the whole table fiasco.
That is for suckers.
Exactly. All right, on that note, we will be paying full price for our Righteous Valkyries this week, but maybe we'll get more than we bargained for. We will let you all know how that turned out. Arun, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much.
For brewing with us, letting us pick your brain a bit.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You know, this was a lot of fun and I was really looking forward to it. And it was definitely, you know, I had a great time. Thank you both.
As always, you can catch Arun on the Seer and Visions podcast that releases every other week. He's always brewing up something spicy.
Doing my hardest to, you know, trophy with bad cards.
Good man.
All right, take care, gentlemen. Have a good week.
All right, bye.
Take care, everyone.
That's a wrap on episode 11 of Kaldheim Season. Tune in next week for our testing results with Righteous Valkyrie and download the latest decklist at our homepage, faithlessbrewing.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can join our community at patreon.com/faithlessbrewing. Joining at any tier gets access to our Discord channel and other cool rewards. Everything is brand new after this week's BNR. There's no better time to come brew with us. Until next time, stay safe and happy brewing.